Increasingly, the doctors monitoring intensive care units aren't at the patient's bedsides or even in the same hospital. Instead, they're using a remote monitoring system known as the eICU to track patients' vital signs and monitor changes in their condition. I'm Becky Bright from the Wall Street Journal, and joining us is Dr. James P. Schaefer, the medical director at Vital Watch, a division of Health First, a company that operates these monitoring systems. Dr. Schaefer, what was the impetus for creating such a system?
The impetus for bringing the system to our health system in 2004 was prompted mostly by the desire of the leadership of the company to improve critical care management, you know, quality at the bedside, but also get a better handle on resource utilization. The idea to bring the eICU program to Health First was born out of a strong effort to build a traditional intensivist program whereby you have intensivists at the bedside 24/7. But that wasn't feasible in our community due to, you know, the sheer lack of numbers of trained intensivists. And the reason this was a desirable approach, at least feasible in our minds at the time, and has actually panned out in some ways better than we thought, was you can leverage good, you know, skills and increasingly rare skills. You can leverage it over a much greater number of patients at any given time. It's never going to become a substitute for bedside care, but it certainly has afforded us with the ability to impact quality of care.
Can you tell us how the system works? What's being tracked through these systems? What's being monitored?
Sure. Basically, it's almost becoming a cliche in our field, but the system is often likened to an air traffic control center, wherein you have a clinical operations center that acts as a central hub for any number of intensive care unit patients. So in our system, we have 78 intensive care unit beds distributed over 6 intensive care units, which are distributed over 3 hospitals. The widest geographic span is about 50 miles, and we're sort of in the center. So we have redundant T1 connections through the internet to each of these beds, and there we can have audio and visual communication with patients and bedside caregivers. And then we have live physiologic data, which streams right into our system, for instance, heart rate, blood pressure, oxygen status, and that data is then funneled right into the software, which sort of the brain that drives the whole system. So inside the command center, so to speak, we can see, hear, and measure data passively and look for and respond to changes, usually before bedside caregivers can ascertain subtle changes.
And when you say that you're responding, are you communicating with staff that are actually on the scene, or are you able to do things from your end? Exactly how does that work?
It works both ways. We have both sort of passive monitoring and active monitoring. So in the active interventions usually occur more towards nighttime when there's a lack of availability of other physicians in the hospital. And then the passive monitoring and passive interventions are basically we are going through every single patient within our system and going through checklists, much like a pilot and co-pilot would do before takeoff, to ensure that every one of them have sort of the minimum standard that is considered to be standard of care in an ICU. So we deliver those, and then more towards night, we respond to acute problems, which can be anything from a patient's having pain and needs a prescription for a potent pain medicine, maybe they're post-op, clear on up to a cardiac arrest, in and we can virtually come into the room and perform, you know, advanced cardiac life support, or at least supervise it. We can also summon other physicians of different specialties that might be needed to provide service.
That's an interesting concept to monitor care that's actually taking place in the room as you're watching. At what point do you ever intervene in the process as it's happening in that care?
Well, obviously physically we can't because we're miles away, although the urge to get up and drive to the site happens when there's nobody around. Fortunately, that doesn't happen very often. But our interventions basically are more of a cerebral, you know, type thing. Most of the ICU care we do is a cognitive process. So from the command center, we decide what therapies, you know, acute therapies need to be carried out, and you can write orders and notes which are printed right to the medical record on site. So basically what the caregiver at the bedside receives, i.e. the nurse, is a physician order to prescribe, you know, for a medication or a procedure or whatever the patient's need may be at that usually late hour.
How many people are typically manning these command centers?
It varies by site depending on how many beds you're monitoring. In our particular system, we have 78 beds, and you have a critical care physician, a unit coordinator, and a critical care nurse. And we're pretty much at our limit there, particularly with the nurse. There are facilities that monitor, you know, over 250 beds, and their staff will be increased appropriately. So it kind of varies depending on the acuity of your hospitals you serve and the availability of healthcare professionals to staff your center.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the cost of such a system for the hospital and how that would compare to the hospital actually hiring one of these critical care specialists or an intensivist to, you know, monitor patients around the clock?
I think there's going to be regional differences, mostly in the cost of physicians at the bedside. But I think this still holds true, but a good ballpark figure in terms of just bringing an EICU from the ground up into your health system or hospital in terms of capital now is close to $50,000 per bed. So that's a good ballpark figure. And that's just to launch the program. And then, of course, once the system is built, it's all operational costs. You're paying staff to be there and perform care remotely. Interestingly, if you look at the costs of developing a traditional intensivist program where you have this similar hours of coverage on site, it's pretty close to what you're going to pay, at least operationally, if not more than it would if you had the EICU. And that is because you have, you know, we're covering three hospitals. A doctor can't be in three places at once. So you have to get things done in triplicate if you're going to accomplish the same level of care. So I think in the end it's more expensive to have the traditional program where you have the intensivists at the bedside if you're trying to manage several hospitals or multiple ICUs over several hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Now you mentioned that implementing the system has allowed you to actually increase the number of bedsides that you're able to provide care to. Can you tell us about what further developments you see with this type of monitoring system? What areas of care would you say could benefit, whether it's an area of providing care or whether it's a geographic region, for example? Can rural communities develop from this type of thing?
it's almost as though the sky's the limit when you have an existing EICU center. You can provide that service to virtually anybody with whom you achieve a connection. And that's probably going to be the next wave, at least in our country, with how these will grow. Because I think eventually you're going to get to a saturation point with the large medical centers, and then the next wave will be the existing EICUs will outsource their services to smaller hospital systems wherein it's not fiscally feasible to have your own. So that's one area of growth. The other area of growth is you can put any type of healthcare professional in the operations center and they can dispense their care. Some examples would include clinical pharmacists can provide assessments and make drug recommendations for ICU patients across your system. Another example would be, for instance, a wound nurse. This is sort of a special niche of nursing that are difficult to come by that have expertise in wound management. With these cameras, you can see and assess wounds, nutritional status, and dispense recommendations. The list goes on. You can also put other specialists behind the camera. Some that lend themselves better than others would be things like infectious disease, dermatology. You can even do psychiatric assessments on a limited basis. There is precedent for doing at least preliminary cardiology evaluations. So really, this whole paradigm is perhaps one of the first paradigms in care management in our country that align everybody's goals. The patient gets better care, the health system delivers its care more effectively, and eventually is going to save dollars, and the care providers have a better life because there's this level of care ongoing 24/7.
It seems almost counterintuitive that a doctor in a remote location could actually help provide better care. And there's always this kind of ongoing distrust of technology, and you don't want to take too much power away from a doctor and replace it with software, for example. What do you see as potential limitations or potential dangers of such a system, and do you think those concerns are founded?
I was originally as much a skeptic as my own colleagues were about the idea of harnessing technology, and had some of the same paranoia that you see from place to place about being replaced, etc. But make no mistake about it, there will never be a substitute for human-to-human care. The doctor-patient relationship, the nurse-patient relationship will never be replaced with a camera. And when we went live here almost 6 years ago, there was dense paranoia about impact on physician autonomy. What is a health system trying to do, take over? And we went through some growing pains, but ultimately we stuck to the central mission of this was to provide service. It was not a big brother, et cetera. It was to provide service to patients and their bedside caregivers. And so we've never sat in a chair, sort of a judgment seat. It's just always been there to help out. And when I say better care, I certainly don't mean to construe that to mean that I can do it better than a colleague at the bedside. That's not what I mean. What I mean is this system acts as a safety net for everything that can't be caught 24/7. And it allows for an expert in this type of care to constantly peruse your sickest patients. And it's been borne out from day one that the care does get better within the systems that have an effective EICU system in place. So I think the paranoia and so forth is, for those systems that have it, has been well managed. it's important that the physicians in the command center or clinical operations center are visible in person within your system. The best ones that function, they have relationships with colleagues and clearly work together.
Can the patients actually talk with those who are in the command centers? Can they see or listen to them? How does that work?
Yes, effective with sort of the latest version of the software, we now have bi-directional video. So in our newest ICU, and it's a 12-bed ICU in one of our hospitals, they, meaning the patient, caregivers, families, can now see me on a pretty decent video screen, and I can interact with the patients and their families. And this really helps, as you could imagine, break down the technical barrier.
I appreciate you talking with us today. This is a very interesting new technology, and we'll see how it goes. Thank you very much.
Thank you for including us in your story.
You can read more about EICUs and other health coverage in the Health Journal report. For the Wall Street Journal, this is Becky Bright.